This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 261. Hey, podcast family, and welcome to another episode of the L3 Leadership Podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow to your maximum potential and to maximize the impact of your leadership. My name is Doug Smith, and I am your host. And in today's episode, you'll hear me interview Clint Hurdle. This was actually the second time that I got to interview Clint. And people always ask me, you know, do I have a favorite interview that I've done? And I certainly just can't pick one. But I can tell you that in the top five would certainly be the first interview that I had with Clint. And if you've not listened to that, I encourage you to go back in episode number 123. It's phenomenal. And it was just such an honor to get to sit down with Clint again. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar, Clint was the former manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates here in Pittsburgh and did a phenomenal job leading the team. And what I love about Clint is he didn't just do a great job on the field. He made a huge impact in our city off the field. And that's what I love about him. And unfortunately, he got relieved of his duties as manager in the fall. And we talk about that in the interview. And he's going to be moving out of our city here in a little bit. And so it was such an honor to get to sit down with him again. And you're going to love this interview. We talk about what he learned through transition. We talk about leadership. We talk about so much, and I got to take him through the lightning round, which I didn't get to do the first time. So you're going to love this interview. And for those of you who love Clint, if you just go to clinthurdle.com, he has an email list and a text list that you can get daily motivational emails from Clint, and they're phenomenal. I've been subscribed to them for 2 years, and so every day I wake up with something in my inbox from Clint that's going to fire me up for the day. And so again, go to clinthurdle.com and sign up for that if you will. And with that being said, we're going to dive right in the interview, but before we begin, just a few announcements. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Baritone Advisors. The financial advisors at Baritone Advisors help educate and empower clients to help make informed financial decisions. Find out how Baritone Advisors can help you develop a customized financial plan for your financial future. Please visit their website at Baritone Advisors, that's Beratung advisors.com. Securities and investment products and services offered through Waddell & Reed, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Baritone Advisors, Waddell & Reed, and L3 Leadership are separate entities. Hey leader, we tell you all the time here at L3 Leadership that you should never do life alone, but in community. And that's why I want to challenge every single one of you to become a member of L3 Leadership. When you become a member of L3 Leadership, you'll have access to our community of leaders who are willing to encourage you, support you, and hold you accountable for going after your goals. You'll also have access to monthly live webinars that we do with nationally known leaders, monthly Q&A and hot seat hours for our members where you can troubleshoot the issues that you're having with your goal and get live real-time feedback on them to help you develop a plan to overcome those issues. You'll have access to every course that we ever create. You'll have access to every L3 one-day talk we've ever had, and so much more. And all of this is available for just $25 a month. In fact, we believe so much in the product that we are willing to give you your first month for just $1. That's right. If you sign up today at l3leadership.org, your first month of membership is just $1. Leader, don't grow another minute without having a community of leaders to which you can go to and grow with. Sign up today at l3leadership.org. And with all that being said, let's dive right into the interview. Here's my interview with Clint Hurdle. Well, Clint, it's an honor to sit down with you again. I was looking over the notes from our first interview, which was 4 years ago, and it was such an honor to spend time with you then. And it's just been fun to get to know you over the past 4 years. And
I'm curious on the leadership end. You've gone through two transitions as managers, once in Colorado, once in Pittsburgh. I reached out to you right after the transition happened here, and man, your response, and you've said this all along, you said this in our first interview, you said to me, Doug, I told people, if God wants me in this seat, no one can stop me from being in it. And if God doesn't want me in this seat, no one can stop me from not being in it. Can you just talk about how you've learned to manage transition when it comes to your identity as a leader, how you process that? I just want to hear you speak on that.
I was humbled and honored to be the manager of the Pirates for 9 years. I never took the position lightly. I never took it for granted. I also wanted to represent the city. And I knew that representation wasn't just on the ball field. It was in the community. It was in the neighborhood at Giant Eagle, at Walgreens, at Brewster's, wherever we were, it's a part of it. And you never know when somebody's going to come up and want to strike up a conversation or ask you a hard question or sometimes to wear you out a little bit verbally. I wanted to represent the name on the back of the jersey, my family name, because I carry that with me everywhere I go. And I wanted my family, I wanted my kids to see their dad as a servant, a public servant. Yeah, he's the manager of the team, but he's a public servant and he's my dad. And I wanted to exhibit and model the behavior that would instill them solid core principles growing up, how I treated the neighbors, how I acted in the community, how I acted in my own home, how I handled tough stretches of seasonal play, or, you know, they would hear negative comments publicly when the team's not playing well or based on my decision-making abilities or lack of them. I just think it made it healthy for the whole family to be realistic and optimistic all the time. And for them to see their father model positivity no matter what, and to know that truthfully, you know, you either believe in God's word or you don't. It's not I kind of believe in what he says or I believe this part of what he says. I believe with all my heart that he wants good for me. And I need to find ways to embrace hard when there's hard times for me, because life is going to be hard. The speed of life is going to be hard. People are going to be messy. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to let people down. Not by choice. However, how I react to those situations is so, there's so much more value in pushing through hard times and coming out the other side and showing my kids the rewards of being steadfast and being persistent and being resilient and continuing to work together in a team concept. So hopefully that can give you some kind of light on what I've tried to do here.
Yeah. I mean, in the 9 years that you've been here, I've never seen someone be able to come into a city and build the influence and make the impact that you've made in the community. I mean, it's absolutely huge. And you're going to be, you know, moving in a couple of weeks. And you said, you know, you're saying all your goodbyes. I'm sure you're busy every hour of the day saying goodbye with people that you've impacted. Just two questions. Just one, what did you do intentionally to build that influence and impact? And what message would you want to leave Pittsburghers with as you start another season?
As I shared with you earlier, too, you have a really good line of questioning. There's value in it. There's thought in it. And there's roots to it. It's not just noise. It's not just, I watch podcasts, you watch podcasts where they're just, hey, kind of flying by the seat of their pants, but you're intentional. And the word I've tried to keep in play for a long time in my life now is being intentional. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be intentional when I was here. I wanted to be real when I was here. I wanted people to see the leader of their team as a human being, as a man of value, a man of faith, a team player, the people that worked in the Pirates organization and the player development side, I believe to this day will tell you, I believe in the chain of command. I answer to Neil Huntington. I answer to Frank Coonley. I answer to Bob Nutting. Also, I wanted to make their jobs easier. One of my goals coming into this challenge here was to make everybody's job easier. Patty Salerno's job easier. Monica Robinson's job easier. Kyle Stark's job easier. Whoever I came in contact with, make their job, Neil's job easier. So intention, and also the fact that I wanted to live that awareness of seeing people and listening to people. I don't have all the answers. I have experience. I have more than some. I have less than others. But I never wanted to bring in an air of better than or less than. I felt every time somebody was in front of me, they're the most important person of my day at that point in time. So I was intentional in building relationships that way, in and out of the community. Now, I spent as much time, more time talking to people outside of the Pirates organization since I've been back for a lot of reasons. But we've had friends. I've had men pour into me here. I have had men help me and what I've been blessed with here are men that tell me what I need to hear, not what I want to hear. Hmm. I've also seen through a job transition when you're not the manager that a lot of people in my life at that time would look at me, but they answered to the role. They answered to the title because I don't hear from them anymore. Wow. And it's not bad. It's not good. It's what it is for a lot of people. You're not in that. You're not in their eyesight. You're not in that vacuum. But I still have people reaching out to me, loving on me, supporting me, challenging me from that aspect. And then to leave the city of Pittsburgh, first and foremost, thank you. From the middle of our hearts, our entire family, thank you for the opportunity to serve here. Thank you for the opportunity to, you know, I heard somebody call it once a revival on the river with the Pirates organization.
Yeah.
A lot of hard work, and there's so many fingerprints on success. I think we can lose sight of that from some time. Hmm. I was gifted to work with some very talented people, and there was a lot of fan support. I mean, you look at the numbers, the attendance. To think back to the blackout game when there's three generations of families at that, a grandfather, a father, and a son, or a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter, celebrating wins, celebrating success for three seasons. We got.
Is that still your last time we talked? That was still your favorite memory. Is that probably your favorite?
Well, it is. It's my most recent. I have two very favorite. To go into the World Series, to win that crazy wild card game in Colorado, game 163 with Holiday at home plate, and go to the World Series. But that wild card game, I've done heavy lifting in both places, but we did some severe. Neil, Kyle, and I, and Frank did some severe heavy lifting here. In Pittsburgh, and to get to that point, to be able to step back and see that crowd, to hear the crowd early in the day coming in across the bridge, and then for it to be the blackout, and then for the game to play out the way it did, and then the fans to Nana Cueto and the ball drop and the homers by Martin, it's still goosebump time. And to still hear people talk about it is so exhilarating and rewarding. And I do want to share this because when I got here, one of the things I realized early is people in Pittsburgh, what I found out is that there was some embellishing in one specific area. I must have had 100,000 people tell me they saw Maz hit the walk-off home run against the Yankees in 1960. I went back and looked at Forbes Field attendance. It held 38,000. Well, since that game, the blackout game, how many people have told me they were there? And I know we hold 40,000 max jammed in as tight as it gets. So, but that's the beauty of sport, and it was the beauty of what we're able to do. And obviously, it wasn't all laughs and it wasn't all high fives the whole way through. However, I want to thank the city of Pittsburgh. And the one thing I would leave them with is my belief for them, the best is yet to come. Somebody else is carrying the torch now.
That's awesome. Before we dive into the lightning round, you've talked a lot about just seeing people and you're present with people. I mean, again, the consistent message I got from your first podcast is just be where your feet are. And actually, I heard you speak of Man Up a few weeks ago, and I never heard you talk about the men who led you to Christ. But you made a statement that I thought was so powerful. You said, they saw beyond just my athletic ability, and no one had ever done that before. And you kind of alluded to it just right now as coach, the people who are really loving you, they're seeing beyond just you're the manager of the Pirates. Can you just talk about loving people for who they are? I'm just bringing up the past, but when you did the interview with me, you said, Doug, I hope that, you know, you don't feel like you have to be the CEO in a steel tower in our city to spend an hour with me. I just love your heart. Can you just talk more about how that impacted you?
It was a very good life lesson for me at a very important time. We all can get caught up in the fastest, the shiniest, the newest, the quickest, the prettiest. You know, I'm an ex-manager now. I'm not a manager. I've been an ex-husband. And at that point in time, at the age of 17, I'd already been through a lot of coaching. My dad was my best and coach for the longest time. And then as I moved up, I got other coaches to pour into me, to share with me. However, the attraction and the learning curve was always based towards sport, directed towards sport. I played all three. I was in basketball. I made a feeble attempt at track one, but the running thing has never been a strike. But with basketball, football, and baseball, I was very gifted in two of those sports. Basketball, I was just the guy you wanted on your team. I would pass the ball. I would rebound, I would block out, I'd dive on the floor for a loose ball. football and baseball were my skill sets. At that point in time, I mean, the guys that coached me were gravitated to a skill set. I wasn't aware of big brother. I didn't need big brothers and big sisters. I come from a loving family. My family loved me. I had friends, I think, that loved me. Neighbors that did. But as far as that one-on-one, it was always sport-related. It was always tactical. It was always fundamental swing, a catch, a throw, mechanics of everything. So looking back, it's somewhat sterile because there wasn't a lot of talk about what do you love to do? What are your hobbies? Do you like to throw the Frisbee? Do you like to surf? Well, I wasn't very good at throwing the Frisbee. I liked it. I never surfed. We lived in close to a beach town. All my friends took that avenue of surfing. I stayed and played ball. Well, coaches gravitate to that. Oh, you're dedicated. I probably just wasn't any good at surfing the few times I tried it. I was that guy. If I wasn't good at something right away, it was out. Wow. So when I went to the church at First Baptist in Merritt Island, I had two men that one of them was kind of funny. He says, so have you lived here long? I said, well, yeah, I lived here all my life. Most people knew who I was. It's not that they didn't know who I was. They really wanted to know who I was.
Wow. That's powerful.
Not that, yeah, that's Hurdle's kid or that's, you know, he's the quarterback or no. It was like, what's your name? Where do you live? Second Street. What do you do? You have any hobbies? And then the baseball, football thing would come into play. But they cared about my soul. They cared about my eternity. They cared about my thought process, what I was feeding myself, what I was filling myself with. And they poured into me. It's kind of funny because after Easter this year, I called up Len Turner. Len's in his 80s. And we had a conversation, and it was like I hear his voice. It was like I was 17 again in the third pew at the First Baptist Church of Maryland, hearing this man talk, hearing this man preach, hearing this man share, him and his wife Patsy. And it all kind of came back. So they were the first two that actually grabbed me by the shoulders and said, we want to get to know you. We want to see you. We want to love you. And we want to lead you to Jesus. And we want to help grow you up. And that just resounded with me. And I always looked for that, more of that. I didn't get a lot more of that. But when I got it, it was special. And I appreciated it. And I just kind of kept it in my mind. If I liked it so much, wow, I bet other people would as well. Just to see them where they are. Not get caught up in the brand of clothes they're wearing or the job title that they have right now. Because some people are this close to popping something. You know, for the best as yet to come. They're not there now, but they're about to, and they don't even know it. Just love them, man. Love them where they are.
So good. Well, let's dive into the lightning round. These are just a bunch of fun questions I love to ask leaders.
Do I need a seatbelt?
Yeah, you buckle up. first question, what is the best advice you've ever received and who gave it to you?
I've got two. My dad, life's not fair. Figure it out. If you're looking for fair, it's not happening here.
Wow.
And one of the things he shared with me all the way through my playing career was there's always going to be players and people that are smarter than you. They got more talent than you, but you should never be outworked or never be outprepared. Hmm. The other part I learned in a program that I still spend a lot of time in is AA. The best advice I ever got was I can't control what other people say, think, or do. For many years, I tried. I don't even know if I thought I could, but I tried. I tried hard. And what I realized is that just wore me out. And it exposed a lot of insecurities that I had in myself. So those two pieces of advice, they ring true today.
If you could put a quote on a billboard for everyone to read in Pittsburgh, what would it say?
The best is yet to come.
Love it. What's the best purchase you've made in the last year for $100 or less?
I've got a bunch of these. Any toy I've ever bought for a dog, our dog. anything of flowers that I've ever bought under $100. Who doesn't like getting flowers? And every time I buy a journal, it's the best gift that I could buy for under $100. Because I have found out, this one's John 330 increase, but to buy a journal and to use it, not as a paperweight, but to write, that resonates with me. When I write, I learn better. I can look at a screen or a tablet, and I get this much out of it. But when I write it, when I take those words off that tablet, put them on paper, and read them, now I have a chance at making them real. And living them. So,
do you journal about your personal life, like reflect, or is it just more just, hey, this stuck out to me?
A little bit of everything. It's a mess sometimes because it's just certain times I just grab it and I scribble something down or a thought that hits me or something I learn. Because I carry that book with me because in my mind, I want to maintain the mindset of being a lifelong learner. I think we may have talked about this before, the white belt mentality. We came up with it in our organization, Bernie Holiday, one of our mental skills coaches, and Kyle Stark and I, and everybody in the organization. We talk about it. Some of us talk about it more than others, but to be a white belt, have a white belt mentality. My son showed it to me when he joined karate because I said, what belt do you get? He goes, the white belt, Dad. I go, so what does that mean? He goes, you know nothing. You have an opportunity to learn everything.
Wow.
I went, whoa. I grabbed my journal and I said, you know, the opportunity to learn everything. And at 62 now, I still want to maintain a white belt mentality. I want to learn. I want to learn something today. I've already learned something from you today. So I'm off to a good start.
Love it. What's a book that's impacted you deeply that you give away most often?
Lead for God's Sake, Todd Gonger.
I've read that one. Yeah.
Well, but there's so many. I've been able to read now more than ever. The Alchemist.
Yep.
Paulo Coelho. I read it the first year it was out. That was 25 years ago because this year is the 25th anniversary of that book, and I read it again. That book, gosh, there's so many when it comes to book. Sebastian's younger book called Tribe I just read. I'm reading the Circle Maker.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Batterson. Love to read. Just love to read. So that would be a couple. I've got a friend that's got a new book out. Jason Romano used to work for ESPN. It's called The Uniform of Leadership that I can't wait to dive into. This guy's got a great lens and he's a really good man.
Do you listen to podcasts?
I do.
Do you have a go-to? One or two?
I do. I don't have a go-to. I spread out. And I'll listen to somebody for a couple months, 3 months, and I'll look for somebody or, you know, because you always got those seeds to go somewhere else. Or if you like this, TED Talks are my go-to to start with. And I've been so ingrained now and through the quarantine that, you know, when you sign up for TED Talks now, they'll tell you what you need. They'll share with you, hey, you may like this one based on what you've preferences you've marked. But the TED Talks are fantastic. And then it's just individual guys that, you know, sometimes other people haven't. Greg Laurie in California, I listen to. I really appreciate that. Max Lucado, I appreciate his lens. But then there's a lot of guys, you know, professionally within the industry and out of the industry, people that I listen to as well. It's not all faith-based, but a lot of it is tied to faith.
What's your biggest leadership pet peeve?
I believe there's beauty in honoring the exit. And within sport, the leadership model, when I see leaders that, I guess, I don't know, but when they're removed, as I was, sometimes I really believe your exit is more important than your entrance was. Because when you enter, you talk about what you're going to do. And, you know, we're in a political climate right now where there's an election coming up and people have been in play for going to be 4 years. And 4 years, they talk about what they were going to do. Then they're going to share what they have done, what they haven't done, what they want to do. And too many times in sport, I see it when the leaders go out, sometimes they're kicking and screaming. And maybe it's fair from their vantage point. I just believe you honor the position. And most importantly, you want to give the next group or the next man that's coming in just level ground where he can get some traction. And it's still not a storm brewing or there's discontent or there's malice or there's anger, or there's angst. When I was removed, I was very quiet for the longest time. I didn't want to go public with anything. I knew what had happened. I knew how it played out. And I didn't want to be a distraction for anybody. I don't want to be a distraction for anybody. And Ben Cherington and Travis Williams and Derek Shelton,
I mean, it's a first for Derek Shelton. I can't imagine being a manager and being on the job for 300 days without managing a game.
Yeah.
And the challenges that Travis, Ben, and Derek are going through. This is a great city to be a part of. This is a historic organization. So I do think my biggest leadership pet peeve is not enough of us have figured out the exit part of it. Wow. We love coming in. We love that new contract. We love that extension. And then when it shifts and it maybe heads the other way, are we still thankful and grateful, or are we yelling and screaming and do we feel violated?
Yeah, I've never heard anyone talk on that, but I thank you for exiting well and sharing that with us. I like to ask the leaders, what's a bucket list item that you've crossed off that you're like, everyone needs to experience this?
I don't know what this is for certain people, but things you don't want to do. I did never wanted to ride a horse. I'm afraid of horses. Horses, no, I'm afraid of horses. I was asked to go on a retreat, and we had a great mindset. One of my mentors, Kelly McGregor in Colorado, we went on a retreat, and he said, you got to pick three things you don't want to do. I'm like, this is going to be the most horrible retreat ever. You go and you pick things you don't want to do. Well, at the time, I did not fly fishing. I fished my whole life. And I got the rod and reel thing down. I'm good. Salt, freshwater, lure, bait, good. Almost professional in some senses when I was a kid. But the fly fish and all that work, I mean, how can you relax and think? I mean, well, you know what? It turned into be one of the most relaxing, fun things that I did in Colorado when I was there because we had the opportunity. But initially, oh, yuck. Just the, and the little bitty flies and all, you do this and, you know, riding a horse, scared to death. And they played a great trick on me because everybody that had signed up for this, you know, some people loved horses, so they were, it was a gas. I did not want to get on this horse. I wanted no part of this, but I had to do it. And it's like, oh, here's Buttercup. Okay, you know, okay, Jill, you get to ride Buttercup. Okay, Bill, you're next. Oh, here's Rainbow, and you ride Rainbow. And okay, here comes Widowmaker. Hey, Clint, here's your horse. My horse's name was Widowmaker. And it was the biggest, scariest looking horse I'd ever seen. And I got on that horse, and that horse knew it, and it was the most stiff horse ride any human being's probably ever had for over an hour. And there were people in our pack galloping and running, and I don't think Widowmaker and I ever got into our stride. But when I was done, I couldn't spit
for the whole time I was on that horse.
And at the end of it, I'm glad I did it. Now, would I do it again? I might. But I mean, for so much of my life, I wouldn't. And the third thing was fire a gun. I'm not anti-guns.
Because my dad had guns in the house. He was a hunter. He did his
Michigan deer and thing. But I never wanted to shoot a gun. And never wanted to shoot a gun. And I can remember going out with Kelly. I was actually in his group that day. Trap shoot a gun. The first shot I took, I hit the target. And I took the gun and I put it down and I walked away. Because I said, you know, I was kind of kidding. I said, well, I don't know what's next. Who wants to go bowling now? I've mastered this, man. Now I've done a lot of trap shooting. At Bob's place up at Seven Springs, I enjoy it now. But for some reason, for the longest time, I was just, no, I don't need, no. No, I'm not going to do that, no.
And then, you know, I've had my wife, Carla, goes out.
Maddie. We've taken Maddie out and gone trap shooting. Christian loves it, so. But I would encourage him, whatever it is you absolutely think you don't want to do, do it one time.
I love it. I've never heard that either. And on the other end, is there anything on your bucket list that you actually do want to do that you haven't done yet that you're looking for?
I came really close, but I want to go surfing in Honolulu. I grew up in a surfing town. My buddy surfed. It was back when Ron John's Surf Shop was about as big as this building, and now it's three stories on Cocoa Beach, and boards were 9 feet long when it all, you know, when it all broke, the surfing scene broke. And there's still a part of me, I don't know if I could even do it, to get up on a board and to do it. However, there's still probably one more trip out to catch a wave, one more wave to catch for me somewhere along the line.
You get to spend time with a lot of leaders, and you love asking questions. I'm just curious, do you have a go-to question or two that you always ask when you get a meeting with a leader?
There is. And
you know, I work my way into it. It's not the first question I ask them, but I'll just ask them, what do you like about yourself? It's a question you don't get asked much. However, the answers are very revealing. And I've actually had some guys, by giving me no, they go, you know, I've never been asked that before. I need to think on that. Well, that's revealing in and of itself, because I think we all need to get to a point where, yes,
we need to realize where our weaknesses are and work on those, develop
skills and all that. I think we also need to find a way. The sooner we can find the meaning or the actuality of liking ourselves, knowing ourselves, and being ourselves, then we're on to something. Mm-hmm. And to truly know who you are. And just to be that guy and to actually like that guy and not to beat that guy up when he makes a mistake, because nobody's perfect. Nobody bats 1,000. And what can that guy learn from the mistake? Because many times I think the mistakes, they're God winks. They're lessons to be learned. And what happens when you don't learn a lesson? You usually get that lesson again.
Yeah.
I mean, in the circle of life, I really believe that if you don't learn a lesson, you'll continue to get situations that will help you walk through that lesson. Or through that step.
What do you like about yourself?
I like that I'm continuing to learn. I like that I want to learn. I need to continue to develop myself and my awareness, because as much as I want to be where my feet are 100% of the time, I'm not. My wife is so good with gentle reminders and nudges, and then sometimes just a direct hit right between the eyes. Hey, I just asked you a question. Sorry. You know, before, it, what do you mean you asked me a question? I mean, that's, and over time now, it's just like, I acknowledge my faults. I acknowledge my weak spots, my warts. And my wife loves me in spite of them. Carla loves me in spite of them. We had a conversation. When you drive somewhere together, you know, we had quiet time. We had a 48-hour date I was telling you about. We haven't had a date in 7 months. It's just her and I. And we had 48 hours together, and we talked about the randomness of what we talked about was awesome, and the honesty involved. She wasn't my best friend when we married. She's my best friend now. And she sees me for me, and she's really helped me just find ways to continue to be that guy and to work to be the best version of that guy.
Anything else you want to leave leaders with, or anyone listening to this?
Do the work. There's days you don't want to do the work. Do the work. There's days you don't feel like it. Feel like it. And I'm not a big fake it till you make it guy, but there is something to be said for a steadfast approach to life. And to showing up today that when your feet hit the ground, what's your first thought? And my first thought when my feet hit the ground, it's been this way for a while, is to be a simple man in a complex world. And Lord, let me be a source of encouragement for others. Let me be some light for others. Let me find a help, a way to make somebody's day easier, not to make somebody's day harder.
Well, Clint, you've started off our day very, very well. This was awesome. Thank you just for adding value to me. Thank you for adding value to everyone who will listen to this. Thank you for the impact you left on Pittsburgh. Thank you for the memories. It's been such a joy to have you a part of our city. And thanks for everything you do for the kingdom of God as well. You're a simple man in a complex world, but you're making a huge impact. So thank you. And hopefully we'll get to hang out again someday.
We will get to hang out again someday. But thanks for all you're doing, all you're continuing to do. And thank you for your crew here today, putting this together. And we will pray that it touches some people in some significant ways, and hopefully we all can continue to learn.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They're a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I both got our engagement and our wedding rings at Henny Jewelers, and we absolutely love them. Not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. In fact, they give every engaged couple a book to help them prepare for their marriage, and we just love that. And so if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out Henny Jewelers at hennyjewelers.com. I I'd also like to thank our sponsor, BAB Inc. BAB is an insurance broker, a third-party administrator, and consulting firm led by my friend and mentor, Russell Livingston. Russell is extremely passionate about developing the next generation of leaders, which is why he's partnering with us on this podcast, and he's also opened up his offices here in Pittsburgh to host our monthly leadership events, and we are extremely grateful for that. The nonprofit that I work at, Light of Life Rescue Mission, started using BAB as our insurance broker around 3 years ago, and we've had an unbelievable experience with them, and we highly recommend them. So if you or your organization has any insurance needs, please check out and learn more about BAB at babbins.com. That's BABBINS.com. Well, hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with Clint. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. For links to everything we discussed, you can find those in the show notes at l3leadership.org/261. And as I mentioned in the beginning of this, if you really enjoyed this interview with Clint, two things that I would encourage you to do. One is to go back and listen to our first interview together, if you haven't already, in episode number 123 of the podcast. It's phenomenal, and you won't want to miss that. And two, if you'd like to stay in touch with Clint, if you just go to clinthurdle.com. He has an email list that you can subscribe to, and you will get daily motivation from Clint, and it's always something that will fire you up and inspire you for your day, so I want to encourage you to do that. Hey, if this podcast episode made an impact on your life, it would mean the world to us if you would share it with another leader that you think it would help. And also, if you would leave a rating and review on iTunes, that helps us to grow our audience organically, and so it'll help us reach more leaders. So if you could do that, that would mean the world to us. So thank you in advance for that. And as always, I like to end with a quote, and I'll quote Andrew Carnegie today, and he said this. He said, "It marks a big step in your development when you come to realize that other people can help you do a better job than you can do alone. Leader, stop doing everything yourself. Get help. Ask for help. You'll be surprised who will help you and how much farther you can go by simply asking for help." So, hey, thanks for allowing us to come into your life again. We hope you have a great week, and we will talk to you next episode.